This hour was brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, Doug, Jeff O'Neill. Noodles, personal day today. Also calling a game tonight, but he'll be back tomorrow. Andy Petrillo will join us later in the week to fill out the three-pack on this show. And Al's brother will join us a little bit later this afternoon as well, so we look forward to that. The Leafs playing a late one tonight, 10 o'clock in Edmonton, and basically half the team is a game-time decision. No word on Austin Matthews. No word on who's going to play in net tonight. But as I said earlier, I would love to see Matthews because it's a 10 o'clock game. Like, I'll be watching it anyway. But drag me into the evening with some entertainment value, Matthews versus McDavid. But I think if you're a Leaf fan and you're Sheldon Keefe, you're thinking big picture. You know, make sure that he's back to 100%. Make sure that nothing is lingering come the end of the season. And because he played so well on Saturday night, not that you wouldn't welcome him back with open arms, but clearly you feel like you can win without him. You know, mm-hmm. It's like when Lowry's out with the Raptors, they find a way. And they've done that so far this year when Matthews has been out of the lineup too. That's a good sign.
And I think you said it earlier, Brian, where a player of his stature that hits probably kind of, he's kind of pulling the strings here, and it's like, what does he want to do? You know, where is he at? What's, you know, the Rocket Richard, all the hardware, and that's not really big picture stuff that the team wants to hear, but he basically wants a shot. Yeah,
he wants it. Why, and he knows these are the ones that might allow for some separation.
Yeah, and you know
McDavid.
What? It's so hard to do with the talent that's in the league right now with McDavid, Draisaitl, everybody else. If you got to get it in a shortened season, who cares? They don't ask how or what season
grab it
was.
Grab
yeah, it just goes on the shelf when you're retired, so grab it.
Well, we will get into what happened over the weekend with Patrick Kane as well, who hit his 400th goal in his career. And I think you could make a strong and compelling argument he's already the greatest American player of all time. If he's not, it's a short list, right? Like, there's guys like Medano that comes up. Chelios would come up. There's mm-hmm. a number of them. There's been some great American players over the history of the game. Kane's right there.
Sure he is. And I find the number 400, it just seems, I mean, when he came in the league is basically when goaltenders started perfecting the position. It seems like 400, the number, seems to have so much more weight to it than it. Like, the guys in the past used to score, like, didn't it seem like everybody had four? Not everybody, but it was like 400 was just along the way to 500, 550. And it just seems like for him, with the goaltending that he's faced in his career, 400 seems to be a real heavy number. And it's ultimately he's going to end up with five something. But is 400 in the future going to be a number that might do something as far as Hall of Fame? Just because of the way the game is played, the amount of points that guys
get. Yeah, it's transitioning, for sure. I mean, the numbers are just not what they were. If you played in the 80s.
Dude.
The
top 10 scorers in the league, it's like 130 points, 120. Nobody gets 100 points anymore.
Nobody hits
two
that.
Guys.
Well, and that's the amazing thing about Kane. Not only does he have 400 points, but he's got 1,056 games in 996 played, or 1,056 points in 996 games. So he's well over a point a game, which is tough to do in mm-hmm. this era for an extended mm-hmm. period of time. And you look at the hardware, and this is where I'm dragging Matthews back into it and him trying to build a legacy here and a case, which I think would be important for him. I think he's obviously a proud American. I think he understands where he comes from in terms of Arizona and what that would mean. But Kane had the Calder. Matthews won the Calder. Kane won a Conn Smythe. Matthews has not won a round in the playoffs, so that's got to change pretty soon. Yeah. Kane had the Art Ross, the Hart, and the Ted Lindsay all in 15-16. So that is hardware that is off the charts that not many Americans, if any American, could ever match.
No.
And that's why I think that's where Kane's going. I think he's going to hold the mantle if he doesn't already. But the current guy that can get it is Matthews. I mean, there's no other American that's close. Jack Eichel is not in the same category as Austin Matthews now.
You just say that hardware again, though, Hayes. That's hard to that hardware is something else.
It's crazy.
Everything. That's
with
basically
three cups.
Everything. Yeah, that's
three cups.
Everything, dude. Three cups, Hart, Vezina, Conn Smythe. That's the whole shooting match right
Yeah, he's
there.
Got it all. But the Rookie of the Year, you only have one chance at that. And it doesn't mean nearly as much, clearly, as a Conn Smythe, as a Hart, even as, you know, a Rocket. or an Art Ross, but you can only get it once. You get one shot at it, and Matthews got it. So he can check that off. Kane has never won a Rocket, likely never will. I guess Matthews could and probably will get that. I think he'll get multiple Rockets. He'd have the one up there. But how are you going to get three cups? How are you going to get a Conn Smythe? How are you going to get an Art Ross, a Hart, Ted Lindsay? That's going to be tough. It's doable, but that's where Patrick Kane is right now. Joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline here is our TSN hockey analyst, Ray Ferraro. We're just tying Kane and Matthews together. We're not sure if Matthews is going to play tonight, but I think Patrick Kane could make a very compelling argument that he's the greatest American of all time already. If not, he's really close. And I think of the current players, the younger generation, only Matthews could be reasonably considered to be in that conversation, unless I'm missing someone. But we just mentioned this, right? He's got 400 goals, three cups, Calder, Conn Smythe, Hart, Ted Lindsay, Art Ross. That's what you're chasing if you're Matthews, if you just want to meet where Patrick Kane is right now.
I think so. He's still one of the most dangerous players in the league.
Right.
He's still like, you know, it's not like his numbers are fading away and he's quietly going away. You know, that great generation of U.S. players with Modano and Chelios and that group. I mean, Kane's at the top of the list for me. I think he will be the best American player. I mean, Jeremy Roenick was there too. He had 500 goals.
Yep.
Like what Kane's done, plus, you know, dragging the Blackhawks to those cups and, you know, like those guys, they were just so good. The three cups in the 5 years too.
And he was like such a rock star. Like,
oh man,
he was
so
unbelievable.
Good. And I we were watching last night, and so they show the highlight, they see his 400th goal, and I'm like does anybody, like, who has that patience to stand there in the slot once he's toe-dragged the guy and the guy's sliding into oblivion, and he just stands there? Like, it's amazing what he can see and do. I just love watching him play.
Another American, Austin Matthews, Ray. How would you treat his situation? Do you think he would be the guy calling the shots on when he goes back in there? There's obviously a lot at stake for him personally, but the team's having success. What's the best course of action for this guy with his wrist?
Well, I guess so. I'm assuming that he's saying, yeah, as soon as he's ready to play, he's going to be saying, yeah, I can play. I'm ready to go. I can get in there. And that's where whatever the docs are saying and the rehab guys about what the actual injury is. Like, it makes no sense for him to fiddle around with something now that's going to become a problem all year, that if he took 10 or 14 days off, it would kind of clean itself up. Like, if that's, you know, there's some things that no matter what you do, the docs tell you, you're going to have to deal with this all year, and then, you know, you're going to get away in the summer, and it'll you can rehab, and it'll be fine for next year. There's some things that they've got to fix, and then there's others that if you took 10 days now, the smart thing is to just take it and go. It's like whatever's going on with Anderson and Campbell, they're rolling along right now. There's no need to jam anybody in. They can't go, and you're going to be fine. If it costs you 2 points here or 4 points this week, you're still going to be fine. So I know he's got, you know, the goals thing and all that, but I'd be pushing for caution. Although if I were playing, I'd want to play as fast as I could anyway.
That's it, right? I'm with you. I'm thinking big picture. I'm not throwing caution to the wind, but if I'm Matthews and I'm his age and I'm playing the way I'm playing and I'm staring at McDavid gaining points, Draisaitl gaining points, Patrick Kane, I'm thinking I'm in that race, right? Like, I'm in the Hart race. I'm in the Rocket race. I want to get it, and I don't blame him for that. So I could see him pushing to come back, even if maybe it's not in the best interest of himself, big picture. But that would take a lot of maturity, too, right, for him to say, you know what, I'll take a step back here.
Well, guys, if you leave it up to the guys, they're generally not going to make the best decision, right? Like, who wants to sit and watch? Yeah, I'll take another couple of days.
For a game 3 months from today.
Yeah, guys aren't going to do that. And, like, I had a scope one time in L.A., and we were in a playoff race, and I thought it was a great idea to play as fast as I could. And I think it was 11 or 12 days that I played after this scope. And for the rest of the year, I got my knee drained after every game. Like, how stupid is that?
Right.
I'm like, yeah, it's fine. And then after the game, I'd take my shin pad off, and my knee would be, like, as big as my fist, and they'd stick a needle in there and aspirate all the fluid out of it, and you'd be like, oh, feels pretty good. I'd take the next day off for practice and play the next day and do the same thing all over again. Like, he doesn't need to do that right now. He can be comforted and, you know, and comfortable in the fact that the Leafs are just kicking the crap out of everybody right now. And, like, that game on the weekend was...
Man, they played well. They played really well.
That was never in doubt. And, you know, he can take the time right now to get everybody, you know, to get himself into a spot where maybe you don't have to think about it again.
Well, and an underlying benefit, if you want to look at it that way, is Marner teams back up with John Tavares, and all of a sudden the captain looks like he's hopping around and he's pretty happy out there in warm-up and he's looking good every shift. And it's going to lead to a discussion. I mean, we know the way this market works, and I have to believe Sheldon Keefe is considering this. He's supposed to. He's the head coach. You have to consider every possible element here in order to put your team in the best position to win. But, you know, we talked about this last hour, that speaking of Kane, he and Taves were on separate lines. Malkin and Crosby were on separate lines. And when Tavares first got here, the belief was John Tavares would be, if not your best player, he'd be right there with Austin Matthews more than likely. And they're on separate lines, and that's going to allow for balance. The truth is the two best players are Matthews and Marner, and that's been determined, and it's not going to change.
So close.
And I don't think it will be close. If anything, the gap will just grow wider and wider and wider. Mm-hmm. So could you apply that logic here, that if you want the balance, quote-unquote, that the conventional thinker applies to a lot of different lineups and championship-worthy lineups, does that lead to Matthews and Marner playing on separate lines?
I don't think there's anything that Sheldon Keefe doesn't explore, at least in his own head. I've been really impressed with the way he seems to think through things four and five moves down the line. It's not like, so say he decides, you know what, let's give this a run for, once Matthews gets back, let's give this a run for a few weeks and see what happens. Say he decides that. It's not like you're giving Matthews a boat anchor to play with. I would suspect Nylander would be pretty charged. Like, I would think so.
Yep.
He looks like he's starting to play, like, the bar that most of us have for Nylander is pretty high, and I think that's why people are disappointed when he doesn't play to that level, because you know it's there. I think it's entirely likely that if they made this switch, it would give him some more juice.
At least for the playoffs, yep. Something that would say, this is our strength over other teams, is having this 1-2 punch, and you're not just going to focus on Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews, and that's where you can exploit a team, having the two separate lines and being dangerous on those two different levels.
Well, because it looked like, as much as we wanted AO like to talk about, you know, and I keep reading it, Tavares does a lot of good things defensively. Good, he makes $11 million, right? Find somebody for $1 million to do a bunch of good things defensively. You need him to score.
No kidding.
Right? Like, and so maybe this is it. Maybe there's nothing wrong with needing a little bit more from your line mates. Maybe he needs that juice that Marner can provide, that maybe Nylander can't. Mm-hmm. Like, the guy's a magician with the puck. He can make plays that other people just can't make.
Nope.
And so maybe Tavares needs that more than Matthews does. I don't know. But you're building up a cushion here that you can try it. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't work in 2 weeks, then go back. It's not like they're going to forget to play together. We already know Matthews and Marner together are devastating.
Yeah, you've always got that.
Matthews is basically devastating with everyone he plays. Same with Ray, I was going to bring it up. 97, you would have to think tonight is going to be, you said, charged up. William Nylander playing with Matthews. I've seen series, or these little three-game series, where he doesn't get anything. I think it was Vancouver early in the year.
Yeah.
And he shows up the next game, and he is something else. So Toronto better be expecting that at a 97 in Edmonton tonight.
Well, I would... I you know, they didn't play a lot in the last game either. Once the game was, I think the outcome was pretty determined there. You know, Draisaitl was down in minutes, and McDavid didn't, you know, they didn't run him real hard in the third period. I think he takes it, I mean, my impression when I watch him is these great players take it really personal when somebody gets the upper hand. And just what you say, oh, it's like they come flying out of the chute in this game, and you're like, man, they better have somebody right in front of him. They better not let him get into the open ice in the middle of the ice. And they did that awesome on Saturday, and that's the challenge to do it again. Because once he gets out and gets those D turning, like, who's going to catch him? The answer is nobody.
Nobody.
No, that's true.
There's no game plan to stop that. It's not possible. With Ray Ferraro, TSN hockey analyst. So last week, I think it was after that Leaf-Flame game, we came in here and just said that was just a game that happened to exist. There's nothing to it. Now, Nylander stole the show. He scores late. He scored a beauty in overtime. That allowed for a reference point down the road. But there have been a lot of those where there's nothing to the game. There's not a lot of emotion, not a lot of juice, not a lot of passion. And there were a couple of things that stood out to me over the weekend. One, the Jordan Binnington show, whatever you want to call it, where he's just losing it. But I appreciate it. He's mad. He's pissed off at himself. And he's like, you're wearing a different color jersey, so I'm going to punch you. And I saw the comment from Mark Giordano, who the captain of the Flames, and said, we need to be more emotionally involved early on. Emotionally involved. And that speaks to me. That says there are some guys in this league that are thinking, we could maybe steal a couple of points by just showing a little bit more life, by just punching a guy in the head and saying, you know what, we're in the mood for a fight tonight. Because I think I get the impression like there's a lot of teams who are kind of, it's almost like an agreement. Like, we're just going to come out and play tonight, right, boys? Like, let's just, and whoever wins, good for you. We'll shake hands afterwards. Where I kind of think, not Broad Street Bully, never going to happen, never should, but a team with a little bit of an attitude could go a long way right now.
Well, Boston did it in New York as well. They got pumped the one night 6-2. And then the next night, the game yesterday, they came out and they just ran all over the Rangers. Like, it was physical, and they were, it was just what you're talking about. They were like, this isn't good enough. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, like for Calgary, for example, I think tonight is 9 games in 15 days. Like, there's no
that's
energy.
Crazy. Yeah,
there's
that's
no
tough.
Juice, man. Like, you tell yourself, oh, let's go out there and I'm tired. Like, you can't rev it up. You can't get it done. And what Binnington did, he's worn out, and he got lit up, and he sucked that night, and he's like, the hell with you guys. And, of course, to make it better is the spare goalie doesn't sit on the bench there, so he's got to go off to the corner of the ice, right? And so
right.
He had to go past Dubnyk.
Past Dubnyk, who had a comment for him, but didn't really want to engage.
And so, you know, like I'm reading, like the San Jose writers are like, oh, childish, and oh, stop it.
Get out of here. Emotional. You're allowed to have it.
Exactly.
You know, it's just the way it goes, and I'm sure the guys were giving it to him after, too. You know, about, like, what were you doing, man? Like, just leave.
Right? The boys love it,
sometimes
though,
that stuff happens, right? It's just, yeah.
Yeah,
I liked it. I liked it because it was different, and it showed some zip. You can say, oh, well, he should have showed that zip when he was in the net. I'm sure he tried to stop the puck.
Yeah.
But now he's on his way to go sit in the corner by himself because you don't even fit on the bench there. And he's like, the hell with this. I don't like you. Somebody must have said, hey, nice saves, Jordan, as he was skating by the San Jose bench. So that was the first punch. And then somebody else just happened to be there, and the next guy. So I don't know. I didn't have a problem with it.
Ray, Columbus has dropped, I think, 5 in a row now, and Torts' name is popping up and not the usual soundbite Torts way that we're used to. Do you think this kind of tests Columbus's loyalty to Torts here as the coach, or is this an easy way to say, you know what, there's been 100 benchings, there's been guys wanting out, nobody wants to stay here. Is this an easy way out for us to just separate from Torts and say, this is the expiry date on you, we're going to move away from you?
That's the danger, isn't it? Like, I think the danger is that everyone's worn out, that they're like, that's all. But I can't imagine, like in Montreal, I can't imagine they're going to hire somebody that's not coaching now to bring them in. Like, it's not like they have, like, the most enormous deep pockets of all time. If they decide we're worn out, we're tired, it's enough, I think they elevate Brad Shaw, who's been a longtime assistant coach, to be the head coach. I can't imagine them bringing in a new coach at this point. I can't imagine anybody doing that.
No, me neither. Yeah, it's tough. I mean, unless there's someone in your market, you know, like I guess a Canadian team maybe could have done that. Like, Montreal makes it more complicated because you have to be bilingual. But,
right,
you know, let's say another Canadian team let go of their coach. Like, Bruce Boudreau is up here in Toronto. Bruce wouldn't have to quarantine or anything. Like, that's a guy maybe you could bring in. But I'm with you. I mean, it's very difficult to see it happening. And it will be – like, the Tortorella case study in Columbus is a fascinating one because they're not talented, yet they've been consistently competitive. Like, last year, I thought he did a remarkable job.
They worked their way into a playoff position every time.
Exactly. So
– well, see, but I think one thing to remember with Torts, and, you know, and I'll be, you know – whatever, honest or whatever. I'm a Torts fan. I like him a lot. I worked with him a bit, and I've gotten to know him a little bit, and I really like him. But the narrative that we have about him in the media and what we all talk about and what we see when he snaps and won't do it at the press conferences, we don't seem to hear that from his players. Like, even when they leave, they seem to like him.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so it's, you know, there's always this outrage about this guy is that and this guy is that. How would people know? They're never there. We're not there. We can't even get in the rink to see or to ask somebody. It seems like they play their asses off for him. But, oh, you might be right that maybe it's just enough. Maybe they're like, you know what, uncle.
Yeah, we were looking for this and we got it.
Right? Yeah. He's not an easy guy to play for. We can see that.
I think he'd be a guy that would get back in the game pretty quickly, though, if he wanted to. I you know, he's not new school in any capacity. Like, everything he does is old school, and he drives you, and he pushes
There'd
you.
There'd be eye rolling, Brian. Don't kid yourself. You get these guys nowadays that are used to being coddled and the entitlement, and they catch whisper that Torts is showing up on the scene. There'll be a lot of eye rolling saying, oh, God.
That's exactly where it'd show up. There was probably too much eye rolling when they were losing games.
I agree. That's a great point by you, Brian.
Thank you, Jeff.
You know, how about this, though? Just the two of you today, eh?
Feeling it. Feeling
well, Noodles decided he didn't want to be on the show.
Yeah, personal day.
Personal day.
Yeah, Noodles often takes days off, freebies.
Right.
We're
just Ray, like never.
In the summertime, it could be 100 degrees. He'll watch a replay on Leafs TV of an exhibition game against the Buffalo Sabres.
If there's a way for Noodles to fire in an extra couple hours work, he's doing it.
I can't imagine
it's like, yeah, I'm going to take the Monday off. Nope.
No.
I don't see it.
He happens to be calling a game tonight, but just for fairness
purposes. There you go.
So, yeah, we're just if you're off, it's all the same.
Exactly. There's no support here. You're off.
He used to take the red eye home from Anaheim, where I would be on the tee at Riviera at 9 a.m. and this guy would make it back for overdrive the next day.
Yeah.
I'd be back 4 days later. Riviera, maybe L.A. Country Club and somewhere else.
Fly down to San Diego for some Torrey Pines, the north and the south. And then
why not?
Fly out and we'll catch you next week.
Yeah, I'll be there Monday.
Yeah, it's all the same, though. It's all just a personal day. If Noodles ran into some sort of an issue, some sort of a complication or, you know, a delay, personal day.
Oh,
at Riviera, personal day. It's all the same. It's all one and the same for us. But anyway, he'll be back tomorrow so we can debate whether or not Carey Price is going to play. I love how Ducharme is going to sleep on it tonight to see if they're going to Jake Allen or Carey Price tomorrow.
Yeah, I love that. Oh, you know, I'm going to decide the goaler at 10:30 tomorrow morning. Oh, you are you?
Yeah.
Just come out and say Carey Price is our guy. He's our best goalie. He's one of the best ever. Just he's going to play. Stop
I think it says something that he's not doing that.
Maybe that's the problem. They
that's
can't say that
exactly
right now.
Exactly right. I think he's probably trying to figure out a way to announce Jake Allen as the starter tomorrow. But, you know, they need all hands on deck because in Montreal, it's already starting to turn on them. Like, they're turning on Price in Montreal. And
well, I was just going to say, you know, you said Ducharme's trying to figure out a way to say that Allen's going to play because that's such an easy market. because they're understanding there too.
They know what they're dealing with.
They want those Habs fans. They want this turned like yesterday. Like,
well,
I don't know if
you
guys watch Montreal play against Winnipeg. They were unreal. Mm-hmm. They played awesome. They outshoot them 41-18. Then they get into overtime, and he starts Danault. I don't agree with the thing, but or Danault and Armia and Petrie. Winnipeg scores 30 seconds in. They got three forwards. That's all anybody's talking about. The previous 2.5 hours are out the window.
Yep,
that's crazy.
It's so
true. People have forgotten how they played.
Yep. Now it's irrelevant. How dare you put Danault and Armia out on the ice?
Well, there is the thought that Danault hasn't scored since last year, so maybe, you know, that is an issue.
Reasonable. Yeah, I don't think that's an outrageous take. It's a lukewarm, room temperature take from people in Montreal. So
zero goals in 50 games is, you know, you're starting to get to be not even an NHLer at that point. Like,
yeah, that's a grind.
50 games.
Holy smokes, he's
tied with the goalie.
Yeah, exactly. You and Carey and Jake, you're all buddies with 5-on-5 goals. Good work.
You're in the sad goals club.
Yeah, good work, guys. Well, we'll see where it goes tomorrow. The Leafs are in action tonight, so we'll break that down tomorrow, and we'll continue to roll along with the season, buddy. We'll catch you tomorrow at 5:05.
Yeah, have a great day, guys. We'll see you then.
There's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Maple Toyota is giving you a break this March with rates from 0% and up to $3,000 back on in-stock 2020 Highlander hybrids. Visit MapleToyota.com. Brian Windhorst on the Raptors playing on Friday night. Try to make sense of that. You knew the shutdown was coming. Clearly, COVID has taken over the whole operation down there. So we'll get to that and a number of things as we lead up to the NBA All-Star Weekend. It is happening this Sunday. The All-Stars are going to be there. The game is going on. And the NBA might have to be concerned about what could happen next Christmas Day, according to Peter King, NFL insider, and what the NFL may have up their sleeve.
Oh, no.
Doesn't surprise anybody.
No.
Certainly not myself. So we'll get into that with Brian and how the NBA would react. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 in on TSN 4. All right, Al's brother in about an hour, Donald Driver, will join us in the next hour. We're looking forward to that. I referenced Peter King's report that the NFL is looking at two Christmas Day games this upcoming
season.
You
knew that they would have double barrel nostril openings for that.
They love it. they had one this year, Vikings against the Saints. They did 20 million. I believe that was about five times the rating the average NBA game did on Christmas Day. Yeah. That has to be concerning for Adam Silver and company. It has to be because
you know,
the NFL's coming.
Kiss my ass, Adam Silver. We're coming and dominate the marketplace.
It feels like it's going to happen. And once they start doing it, they're going to do it almost every year. Outside of a game on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, I think they'll do it. Chat about that amongst many other storylines throughout the NBA. Here's Brian Windhorst from the NBA on ESPN. How might that pique the interest of Adam Silver and the owners in the NBA if the NFL decides we're going to start playing on Christmas Day?
It's not good. How do you feel about a big slate on Christmas Eve?
right. Do something.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Yeah, I do think it'll be cyclical depending on the day of the week. I mean, already when Christmas is on a Saturday or Sunday, there's some of that that happens anyway. But certainly everybody takes a backseat to the NFL.
Yeah, and to your point, I don't think they'd play on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, but the NBA's owned that day for a long time, and they've also owned, you know, All-Star Weekend. They do it bigger and better than any other league, and it's way more of an event. And I think a large part of that, Brian, as you would know, is that their players buy into it. The players want to be there, they show up, and they look forward to it. I'm not sensing that's going to be the case this year. What do you expect the general mood to be among players this weekend at the NBA All-Star Game?
Yeah, you know, I think they'll go through the motions. I mean, they're only going to be there for one day. I mean, the thing about All-Star is it's sort of an extravaganza. And the unfortunate part about it is last year's game, I would argue that the fourth quarter of that game, that Elam ending that they call it, was as intense, as enjoyable as basketball as I've watched in the NBA in my 18 years covering the league. I mean, I'm not saying it was better than Game 7 of Cavs Warriors, but it was right there. The intensity level and the high level of competition in that fourth quarter I just ate up every second of it. And so it's unfortunate that they had the momentum of that, which the players who, you know, both coaches basically did make a substitution the entire, like, however long it took.
Right.
And the players who were on the sideline really wanted to get in the game. And so I think the players would be really into that. And I just think that you're gonna lose that. I mean, they don't even know which teams they're gonna be on until a couple of days before that. You know, in years past, they've done that draw like 10 days out. The whole thing, they're just trying to get it together. But you know, there was a report, and I don't know whether I believe this, but I'll choose to believe it. There was a report in China. I haven't seen it here in the U.S., but there was a report in China that 50% of the All-Star voting came out of China, of the votes that were cast. Oh, and I believe that they're going to have the All-Star game on broadcast television in China. Now, they've had streaming rights for the last year, but they've only had a couple of games on broadcast television. And it's for those type of reasons. I'm not saying it's all because of China, but it's for those type of reasons that the NBA wants to have this event, because it engages casual fans in a time when they need that, and that's why they're pushing for it.
Can you see any player pulling the pin on this, Brian? Last minute little groin injury. Oh, can't make the All-Star.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah.
A big name?
Give me your thoughts.
I don't have a crystal ball, but you're asking if I'd be surprised. No, I would not be.
Yeah. Well, that's,
that means
again,
LeBron's not going.
Yeah, we'll put
LeBron
you down
will go.
For
LeBron. I'll say this. LeBron, no matter what you want to say about him, he checks the boxes. He fulfills his responsibilities. He is a guy who gets it. He doesn't skip games anymore. He will be there. I'm not saying he's going to have bells on, but he'll be there.
With Brian Windhorst from the NBA on ESPN. So the Raptors almost got to the halfway point without COVID, factoring into anything they're doing outside of the fact that they quite literally had to move countries and go from Toronto to Tampa, which obviously was an adjustment. But none of their games were postponed. You know, it feels like you're just on a balancing board to begin with in the NBA and in pro sports. And the reaction up here is, you know, when we heard the news on Friday, Nick Nurse and four or five members of his staff weren't going to be able to be a part of the game, and we heard Siakam was out, we on this show spontaneously, while the news was coming out, was saying, why are they playing tonight? Like, this doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, how can you play? We've seen other games be shut down. Like, clearly tracing has to happen. They ended up playing it. Credit the Raptors. They win. And then on Sunday we find out, no, they're shut down, and it's because they can't even get to the necessary amount of players, which means something serious has happened here. Can you explain that for us, Brian, from the NBA's perspective, why kind of force that game in on Friday, considering COVID was clearly lurking at that point?
Well, first off, I hope the coaches are okay, because we haven't seen outbreaks in the coaches in the league, and they're more susceptible because they're older. And frankly, you know, they're not – you know, in the top physical condition of people in the world, like the NBA players are. So I just hope that Nick and his staff are okay. I really, really do. You're asking for consistency in the contact tracing. There isn't any. You know, the NBA doesn't release all the information that they have for privacy reasons, so it's very hard for people like me to make apples-to-apples comparisons. But even in situations where I'm aware of what's going on that's not public, I can tell you that their decisions seem to be inconsistent. They seem to really go on a case-by-case basis. And they just don't want to postpone games, especially now when the second-half schedule is set. And they're looking at, for a lot of these teams, 37, 38. For the Spurs, I think it's 40 games in 73 days. I mean, that's just a breakneck pace, considering these teams have to travel. That would be a breakneck pace even if you were in the bubble. But that's a breakneck pace, and they want to try to get everyone in. And you know, part of it is over finances. Every game that you're not going to be able to fulfill that goes under 70, you got to write a check back to your provider. You know, most of these contracts for these local TV deals are 70 games. You've got to guarantee. And if you fall short there, that's money given away. And that's, let's just be honest, that's a driving force for everybody. The money is the driving force here. So you hope everybody's okay, but if you're asking for consistency and reasons, I don't think you're going to get them. And you can talk to other teams that have faced shutdown, whether it's the Celtics or the Wizards or the Suns, who have had the same type of decisions made that have been frustrating.
With Brian Windhorst, we'll ask you the gratuitous Kyle Lowry question that is thrown around, you know, daily up here. You know what he means to the city of Toronto, what he means to Raptor fans, and his resume speaks for itself. But you're also aware that it's a business, like you pointed out. He'll be a free agent at the end of the year. He's not getting any younger, and this team, I think, is a playoff team in the East. I think can win a round or two depending on how the chips fall. I don't think they're a championship contender right now. What's your understanding of where Lowry stands in terms of future plans with the Raptors and what other teams around the league are thinking in terms of where Kyle Lowry stands in Toronto?
I think Kyle is very much at peace with the situation. I don't think he is agitating for one thing or another. I think he will play hard for the Raptors rest of the season. If they want to trade him, I think he's open to it. I think if they are going to trade him, he would probably prefer it to be a place he could stay long term so that his bird rights matter. But I think he'll play and he'll go all the way to the wall for the Raptors if they want to keep him. I think organizationally, I think doing nothing is not a good option for the Raptors. I think they have to decide, we're either going to add to this roster, we're going to make a meaningful move to upgrade this roster to bring us out of the middle of the pack and give us a fighting chance. And if that trade isn't available or you don't feel like making that trade, I do think you have to seriously look at moving him. And that may be a decision that gets made tomorrow. It may be a decision that gets made March 20th. I don't know, but that's probably what's going to be at the feet of Bobby and Masai. And the real thing that I don't know how the Raptors fan base would feel about Kyle being traded. To me, it would be a huge mountain to overcome. But some people I've talked to in Toronto, they know the Raptors fans understand the score. They get it. But to me, he's Mr. Raptor. And I don't want to take anything for granted on that. But Masai has shown, whether it was firing Dwayne Casey or whether it was trading DeMar DeRozan, Masai is not afraid to make a move that could potentially be unpopular. That's not an issue.
Well, and that's where I would just – not counter you, Brian, but as much, you're right. Everyone loves Lowry up here. He's Mr. Raptor, but everyone loves and trusts Masai equally. Like that's where it's an interesting balance up here, where on one end you're like, I want Lowry here, even though he's not playing here. We can't go down to Scotiabank and watch him play, which I think eases the transition a little bit if need be. But I can't tell you how big of an icon Masai Ujiri is up here at the same time. So if anyone could smooth it out and explain it, would be Masai.
I would argue that after Greg Popovich and Pat Riley, Masai probably has the most capital of any management in the league.
Yep.
And maybe even more, because, you know, the Spurs don't make big, crazy, wild trades. So Popovich doesn't have to trot it out very often. The thing about it is that we don't really know what the market's going to be, but if the market stays the way it is, there's just no sellers, guys. They're probably the biggest name available on the market right now is going to be Victor Oladipo. He's having a terrible season. Doesn't mean he can't help a team. But if indeed Kyle was available, even on the last year of his contract, you might be able to exact a tremendous price for him because of what he can make. Now, you would have to potentially trade him to the Eastern Conference and maybe within your division. But even that would potentially enable you to raise the price. And if you can raise a price for a guy, for a guard at the back end of his career, at the last year of his contract, making that kind of money, you may get in a situation where you may be able, where there may be an offer where you can't help yourself, where the only responsible thing to do is to trade him. But I don't think that the Raptors are there yet, and I also think they have to see maybe what they can trade for in the interim.
You said he would want to go somewhere, Brian, that he could be there long term. Like, what the heck does that mean? How old is this guy? How long are you talking about?
Well, I'm not saying he's going to sign a 5-year deal, but what I'm saying is, you know, if he goes out in the free agent market next year, you know, he may have to take a mid-level exception. If he goes to a team that's a contender, which is the only team that would trade for him now, and they get his bird rights, they can pay him a lot more.
Right.
You know, like, let's just say for, it's no secret in the world that the LA Clippers would love to have him. I don't think that they can execute a trade for him. I don't think it can happen. But let's say that he ends his season with the Raptors, and he gives a giant wet kiss to the city of Toronto and says, goodbye, I love you, and he wants to go play with guys he's close with in Toronto, Kawhi, Tyronn Lue, Chauncey Billups, Serge Ibaka.
Serge.
They could offer him $5 million. That's what they can offer him in free agency. If he gets traded there, he could ask for 20 and might get it. So that's why he cares. Where, you know, if he gets traded, he'd like to get traded to a team that he can potentially stay with so that those bird rights matter.
Well, this is how bizarre the world is right now, where I'm starting to think of which teams might be interested, and somehow I'm including the New York Knicks. I don't think they should jump to any conclusions. I don't, well, listen, I don't think he will either. I don't think the Knicks should do anything crazy. I think they should continue to ride this wave. But I, 2 weeks ago, I was like, this is just going to fall off a cliff. And now I don't think it will. Like, I'm getting the impression like the Knicks are going to make this work. And Thibodeau's doing it again in terms of just grinding. And what do you make of the Knicks so far, Brian?
Well, maybe. Their schedule is not favorable. I will take my hat off to what they've done. I think they've way overachieved. They've been very impressive. This is a year where nobody's defending. It's the highest profile, most prolific offensive season in the history of the league at this point. The Knicks are second. Last year they were 23rd. You take a team from 23-2 in defense in a year, largely with the same personnel, that's you're doing something there. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I think they have the third toughest schedule the rest of the way. They have a 6-game West Coast trip that's going to kill them late in the season. Coming out of the break, I think they play Brooklyn, Milwaukee, and Philly twice in their first 5 games. They are in fourth place right now, and that's awesome. March 1st, fourth place, that's awesome. They're 3.5 games out of 12th. They have a bad week, they're going to be in 11th. So I take my hat off to them. I'm not yet willing to say that they've arrived. But I think in terms of Lowry, I think you should look for teams that are competing for a championship like right now. Mm-hmm. There's 3 or 4 that make more sense than New York.
Oh, yeah, for sure. He's not going to the Knicks. But I'll give him credit. They're in the race. You know, they're playing well. They're winning games. And first time we said that this deep into the season in a long, long time. Great stuff as always. Thank you for this, Brian.
Take care and have a good day.
You got it. Brian Windhorst from ESPN.
So, he was sounding like a few gentlemen are going to say check, please, on the All-Star game.
I think he's got an idea of who that might be or where that's going. And an interesting take there on Lowry as well. You know, like Kyle's a pro. The Raptors have been very good to him, and he's been very good to them. It's been a mutual relationship, mutually beneficial relationship. He's going to play. He's going to grind. He's going to be happy. But I think what has become clear here is he's not – this isn't like Matt Sundin, where he's saying, I don't want to go, don't trade me, I'll be pissed, I won't forgive you for it. You know, it's, if you move me, I can go to the Clippers.
Yeah, but I
also want to do that, or go to Philly.
I also think, Brian, that most athletes kind of have a thought in their head. I don't think his thought is, I'm happy to be Mr. Raptor, I'll be happy here, I don't really care, I'm also happy if you do this. There is a preference, and Brian didn't really know what that preference was. Everyone has preferences, man.
You do, but some of them are abundantly clear. Some of them are in your face, and some of them you go kicking and screaming to get.
Some of them are more abundantly clear because the athlete doesn't want to make it known, and I think in a situation like Kyle Lowry's, he would be somewhat wanting to hide possibly a motive to want to leave. That's my personal opinion.
Well, and I could see that because of his history. Right,
yes.
Like he wants and he should cherish his legacy here. I don't think, maybe he's misreading the room, maybe I am. I don't think Raptors fans would blame him. Some would not take it well if he publicly asked to be out. I don't think that's a smart move for him, nor would I expect him to do that.
And maybe he doesn't really want out, but all I know is from my time dealing with professional athletes and listening to them sitting on the back of a bus or in a restaurant on the road, it's generally I'm happy either way. It's
right.
Generally not I'm happy either way. Because that's just never the case, man.
You're right. It's one or the other.
It is.
You're a human being. It is one or the other. And it may very well be I've seen Marc Gasol move on. I've seen Serge move on. Kawhi moved on. Danny Green moved on. My best friend DeMar was out a couple of years ago. Like, he's looking around, and it's a different team now also. He doesn't have as much of a connection to it, even though
they've
won a title and the city is what it is. But he's not even playing in the city. Not in Toronto. He's down in Tampa. So that may allow for him to push that thought in a different direction, or more in the direction he's already leaning. Donald Driver will join us in the 6 p.m. hour. Al's Brothers Power Rankings, 1-7, the best Canadian teams. 1-7, the best defensemen playing for a Canadian team. And the NFL is ruthless, as we know. There was another example of it based on a report today. We'll tell you about that next.
Just going over some invoices here, Hazy. How much do you think a toilet costs, like a nice one?
Got to be a few hundred bucks.
Dude, I got a bill for 2 toilets, $3,800.
Get out of here.
I'll email it to you.
$3,800,
2 toilets.
What are you doing with those toilets
besides
the obvious?
They should make sandwiches on the back of them and hand them to you while you're on the can.
Honestly. Like, they should come with Wi-Fi. There should be a phone in there.
Charger.
How far away are we from that? Would society ever accept that? Like, would society accept we're going to have a toilet that is decked out with modern capabilities where you can charge your phone, you got a little, you know, maybe there's a speaker. Like, is that allowed, or are we just not doing that? Like, are we not going to admit that the
obvious
happens?
I'm going to find out what kind of toilets these are, because they better do the full clean, activated.
Dolce & Gabbana. Like, those are the most expensive toilets of all time. Those are, like, Italian porcelain from Rome, right out of St. Peter's Basilica to the O'Neill House. It's outrageous.
It is outrageous. I'm going to get to the bottom of it because one of my best buddies is doing it, and it's just I read the email, 3,800, two toilets. I'm like, what?
Not happening. Can't. All right, I'll tell you about this Alex Smith Washington football team story in the next hour because the NFL, it's a business in the end. It happens. I'm not surprised by it. But the grind this guy went through, and now he's back. Now his cap hit applies. So he can't play there anymore. Thanks for coming
Tough,
we got to cut you. You got to move on. We'll get into that in the next hour. Donald Driver will join us. Al's brother coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.
Alpine Credits.
Yes, it's your English teacher, Mrs. Nelson. You've been using the word approved quite a lot lately.
True, but...
You know there are alternatives like accepted, authorized, confirmed, validated. Let's try. I own my home and would like a loan.
Accepted-ated.
Alpine Credits, where homeowners get endorsed, confirmed, permitted, allowed, okayed, and approved. Some conditions apply. Alpine Credits.
FSRA license 12616.
This hour is brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.